B. Collins.
Peter B. Collins News and Comments. It's Friday, January 27th, 2017. And I'm trying something new today. As I record my podcast at the Secret Studio north of San Francisco, I am live on Facebook, providing a video feed. And I see Alex Marin has already checked in, the very first viewer of our live video feed today. And I know that on Facebook, dogs, cats, and puppies are extremely powerful in drawing an audience. And so I promise to provide a little cameo appearance by my lovely studio dog, Chloe Rose, who is here with me. And our listeners to our ordinary podcast can't see her. But if you go to Facebook, this live broadcast will be archived, and you'll be able to see it at your convenience, whenever you feel like it, on demand, as they say. Chloe, thanks for being with us here today. You get an extra cookie here. Here you go. And Chloe, I hope you can keep your mouth shut during the podcast, because that's where we're going to start today. I have been advised, along with all other members of the media, by Stephen Bannon, the bully's bully, the counselor to Donald Trump in the White House, who said that the media is the opposition party. And he asked to be interviewed in the New York Times. They put it on the front page. He doesn't usually grant interviews to corporate media outlets, only to, you know, very reliable right-wing groups like Breitbart, where he came from. And he said the media should be embarrassed and humiliated and keep its mouth shut and just listen for a while. Well, Steve, I really don't know how to keep my mouth shut. And unaccustomed as I am to being ordered to do so, it really just, I don't know, it produces the reverse reaction. It makes me want to speak even more. And I think my colleagues in the corporate media and the independent media feel very much the same way. So Bannon is described as the strongman behind the Trump bully. He's the guy who helped send a Sean Spicer out to the podium in the press center last Saturday, where he delivered this attack on the media over the crowd estimates for the inauguration that appeared to have been dictated directly by Trump himself. Maybe it was tweaked a little bit by Steve Bannon. But Bannon is trying to settle scores, and he is attacking the media organizations that elevated Donald Trump to the position he's in today. Without all the free media coverage that he got on television and in print and online, Donald Trump, I don't think, would be president today. He racked up billions of dollars in free media coverage, and the other candidates were left in the dirt. So, for him to continue this bunker mentality and the whole idea that Trump is in a long-running war with the media, well, many people have noted that this is one of the elements of fascism, that you attack the media and the good government observers, and it is one of the elements you use to establish an authoritarian or dictatorship type of regime. So Bannon is unapologetic, and he thinks that we should accept the alternate facts, the alternate universe that is presented on a daily basis by the Trump administration. And as you can tell, I'm not buying it. So this week, Trump started on Monday night with a meeting with congressional leaders and said that his alt-reality is that there were millions of illegals who voted in last November's election. And we now have discovered that there is a source for this lunacy. And his name is Greg with two G's, Greg Phillips. Trump tweeted about him at 5:12 this morning. Looking forward to seeing final results of vote stand. Greg Phillips and crew say at least 3 million votes were illegal. We must do better. So CNN had him on with Cuomo. What is Cuomo's first name here? I'm sorry. I don't have it in front of me, but the Cuomo guy. And Well, Phillips said 3 million illegal immigrants voted, but he's still working to prove it. And he really was, I think, discredited in this interview. Chris Cuomo, thank you, Carl. That's the cool thing about this this video thing is I can see the screen and who is watching right now, and people can correct me when I get stuck, like, you know, what's Chris Cuomo's first name? Snopes.com, which debunks things that are believed to be untrue, says that we scoured at least a dozen articles for evidence to support the claim but found none. They all point back to the same source, a pair of tweets by Greg Phillips, whose Twitter profile identifies him as the founder of VoteStand. Well, at BuzzFeed today, they drill down and give us more information. And what we learn is that this guy, Greg Phillips, is essentially a freelancer. VoteStand is described by itself as America's first online election fraud reporting app. He also says he's a member of True the Vote. That's a Tea Party election activist group. And on November the 11th last year, he tweeted, completed analysis of database of 180 million voter registrations. Number of non-citizen votes exceeds 3 million. Now, examining registrations will not tell you who voted. That's simply the people who are eligible to vote. And so there's a huge disconnect here. And the more this guy talks, the less credibility he has. So if this is Trump's source, wow. It's amazing. Trump appears to respond to TV shows, to Twitter feeds and Twitter blasts, but he doesn't have any intellectual curiosity. He doesn't appear to seek additional information. He just turns on the TV. And one of the things, if you watch too much TV, you will get a sense that crime in the United States is, you know, far excessive of reality. And in fact, over the last 20 years, crime rates in most important categories have declined sharply in this country, except on TV, where the primetime entertainment shows and the news programs all accentuate criminal behavior and turn it into a bizarre form of entertainment. So Trump went to Philadelphia for the Republican congressional retreat. And when he got there, he decried Philly's rising murder rate. I mean, just terribly increasing. Only it went down slightly last year, and over the last 10 years, it has declined sharply. He's also been called out for a clear lie about Chicago. Now, I'm not trying to deny that Chicago has a serious murder problem, and gun violence is out of control there. But Trump explicitly said that when Barack Obama went to Chicago in early January to give his farewell speech, that two people died in Chicago while Obama was speaking. And reporters have dug into that. Guess what? It's an alternative fact. And over at Vice News, they report that this is a pattern now that's developing in the first week. I'm sorry, I just covered the camera. In the first week of the Trump presidency, he said that killings have risen by 50% in Washington, D.C. But that's not true either. There was, in fact, a 17% decrease in the last years when you compare from the data available. And violent crime in Washington dropped by 10%. So Trump is invested in a set of facts that he draws upon selectively, he cherry picks, and a lot of it is either flatly wrong or misleading. And when I look back just at the last 7 days, we've seen that Donald Trump exhibits serious insecurity and narcissism. He is petty, worried about what people think about the crowd size. He is petulant, demanding that the media genuflect in front of him. He is paranoid. He talked at an inaugural ball last Friday night about enemies who want him to give up Twitter. Enemies? Who are your enemies, Donald? I haven't really seen that. And he's now become a pathological liar. He may have been before, but he has exhibited this clearly in the examples about crime that I just cited. So to its credit, the Washington Post, which often reports stenographically, the inaccurate information in the Beltway, Washington, D.C. They ran a piece today, what we talk about when we talk about Donald Trump and gaslighting. And in 1944, Ingrid Bergman was in a film called Gaslight. And in it, the characters are able to basically change the sense of reality to make somebody feel crazy. To gaslight someone isn't just to lie to them or to manipulate their emotions. It is a deliberate attempt to deceive someone into questioning their own perception of reality. So, gaslighting has become very common. CNN used it, Teen Vogue, NBC, just in the last few days alone. And we are being gaslighted. We're told to question the reality that is quite evident before us, and the set of facts that many of us agree upon. And so when Steve Bannon tells us we should shut up and accept their alt-reality, well, I go to the Peter B. Collins tax-deductible archives and dig up the Republican saint, Ronnie Reagan. And I have this clip from a news conference that Reagan presided over. It was about 1983, as I recall. And he didn't like the question the reporter asked, so he shouted him down.
In spite of the tax, increase, shut up.
Now, Trump is also trying to spin up that the wall is going to be built and that Mexico is going to pay for it. And after President Peña Nieto of Mexico canceled their meeting for next week, Trump spent an hour talking with him on the phone today. Now, it's unclear if they mended fences, and forgive that comment, but we're not being told what they said. But yesterday, after he went into a funk, Trump ordered Sean Spicer to float the idea of a 20% import tax on everything that comes from Mexico. And I want to credit a radio pal of mine, Zeb Norris, who made a post here on Facebook, and he said, you know, if we're going to pay a 20% tax on avocados, on cervezas, on anything else that comes into our country from Mexico where we have a negative trade deficit, that means we buy more from Mexico than we sell to Mexico. Well, a 20% border tax means that you and I are going to pay for the wall. A tax on imports is going to be paid by the consumers. And I guess Trump is just floating it as a threat. But it seems to me he clearly didn't think it through, and Steve Bannon is so busy fighting the media that he was unable to counsel the president either. And here's where facts get in the way. All right, first of all, when you focus only on the southern border as the sole source, the beginning and the end of America's immigration problems, it is by definition racist. Because we're not talking about the Asians or the Europeans who overstayed their visas here. We're not talking about millions of other people who found other ways into the country that didn't involve the Rio Grande or the border station near San Diego. And here's a story from the AP today that one of the ways that migration patterns have shifted is that many people who want to come here now seek asylum. They don't try to climb the wall. They knock on the door at the border crossing and say, I'm applying for asylum. Please let me in. The other factor is that since 2000, since the recession, and most recently a study by Pew Research in 2015, shows that more Mexicans are leaving the United States than entering. And so, again, we have these policies and these dramatic initiatives that Trump has initiated or launched in the past week, and many of them are massively disconnected from reality. Here's another example. Trump doubled down today, but backed off a little bit too. He continues to assert that torture works, and he uses the word torture. I mentioned yesterday that George W. Bush, who is not the brightest guy in the world, knew that he never should use the word torture. It was euphemism, enhanced interrogations, right? But Trump doesn't bother with those niceties, and I think that this could trip him up in the long run. But he continues to say that torture works, but Because Defense Secretary General Mattis, Mad Dog Mattis, opposes torture, doesn't believe it works, Trump says he will override. I'm giving him that power. You believe that? I don't think that the ego of Donald Trump will permit an override if there is some situation like a TV show that Donald's seen, like 24, the ticking time bomb, where we've got to torture somebody to get information from them to, you know, presumably prevent something worse from happening. So one of the other interesting things is that British Prime Minister Theresa May, who joined the president for a joint news conference after their lunch at the White House today, she's trying to kiss his ass big time. No question about it. She feels some sort of kinship because they're both conservatives and they both support Brexit. But Theresa May made it clear before she arrived at the White House that she is bitterly opposed to torture. And I don't know if that had any impact on Trump, but I give her credit in the current context for taking that position. But she also emphasized that the U.S. must not abandon international institutions like NATO and the UN. And I'm glad to hear her saying things like that, because Trump needs to hear them. In The Guardian today, there's a very powerful op-ed. And if you're watching on Facebook, I'm holding up the article with the picture of Moazzam Begg. He served some time at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, and he details his arduous journey in this op-ed. Now, I've linked to it in the show file that is part of the audio podcast at peterbcollins.com, or you can go to The Guardian's website and look it up. But I've actually spoken to Moazzam Begg. It was accidental. I called cage prisoners in London one day, and he picked up the phone, and we had an interesting conversation. Like many former Guantanamo prisoners, he is not bitter, not at me or you. He's bitter at George Bush and Don Rumsfeld, but he can separate those. So I won't read you the story, but I encourage you to check it out, because he describes the brutal torture and interrogation that he received. Let me just pick up this piece here. I was sent to Bagram. That's the Air Force base near Kabul, Afghanistan. As an English speaker, I was interrogated more than most by numerous agencies. I was taken into isolation, and the CIA threatened to send me to Egypt or Syria if I didn't cooperate, as they had done to a man called Sheikh al-Libi. They told me he talked within days of arriving in Cairo. And jumping to the next paragraph, I next saw their agents soon after arriving at Gitmo. They'd prepared a document they wanted me to sign, warning me that I could face a summary trial and execution if I didn't. I signed in the hope that the abuse would stop, and that once in court, I could expose the reality of what had happened to me. I was eventually released in 2005 without charge or trial, and have been campaigning against torture ever since. And the New York Times published a piece today about the case of the Somali terrorist accused, his name Ahmed Warsami. He was picked up, held aboard an American warship. This is back in 2011. And this is where Obama refused to send a new prisoner to Guantanamo and to the kangaroo courts, the military commissions. And so Obama insisted they try the man in federal court. He pled guilty, and then he started talking. He was never tortured, we're told, but he became one of the nation's most important terrorism informants. And they say that he prevented a terrorist attack in Saudi Arabia. He helped in the hunt for Anwar al-Awlaki, an episode that I don't approve of. But he also apparently coughed up a lot of valuable information. We don't need to use torture, and torture hurts the United States. Today, I'm releasing an in-depth interview to my subscribers at peterbcollins.com, and the guest is a scientist from the University of Wisconsin at Madison, and he's got a name that's hard to pronounce, but let me give it another go. It's Sainat Suryanarayanan. And we have some fun in the interview with my efforts to pronounce his name. But the book is called Vanishing Bees, and it's subtitled Science, Politics, and Honeybee Health. And he surveys the current state of science related to the colony collapse disorder that has hammered bee populations in the United States for over 10 years. And the book is kind of diplomatic and even-handed, but our interview was less so. And he made it clear that the chemical giant Bayer is using tobacco industry tactics to deny a connection between powerful pesticides and the die-off of our bee populations. And then I asked him to tell me what he thinks about the EPA and Donald Trump's nominee to run the EPA, the current Attorney General of Oklahoma, a hardline anti-environmentalist named Scott Pruitt. And this is what Sai Suryanarayan had to say.
I'm very concerned. In fact, I'm concerned that the arguments that we made in the book about improving the EPA's regulation are moot right now, because right now we are coming to a more primitive politics where the very existence of the EPA is under question, in a sense. So forget about improving the EPA. We're talking about even, you know, is EPA going to be there as we know it? And so I'm concerned.
I invite you to listen to the full interview with the scientist from Madison. We call him Sai. And as you know, I have a particular appreciation for bees. We use graphics of bees because of my middle initial in the logo for the Peter B. Collins podcast. And people send me bees. Here's one that came in from a listener several years back. So I collect them, and I do care about bees. And I think that you'll enjoy the interview and learn something like I did. Also, I want to thank some people who support my work here at the Peter B. Collins podcast. I have a number of subscribers. I have quite a bit of support out there, people who have been listening to me since I left commercial radio back in 2009. And I want to single out two people today, Shelley Stark and Ian Berman. They're both very staunch supporters of the work I do, and they put up some really strong endorsements of my work on Facebook just in the last few days. So I invite you to come over to peterbcollins.com, and if you'd like to become a subscriber, I'd like that. I'll be honest with you, over the past year, I lost a lot of my subscriber support because of the strong comments and opinions that I offered on the presidential campaign. And so I am inviting people to support the work I do. I don't have any corporate sponsors. There are no foundations that write me grants. I do this with the help of people like you. So come on over to peterbcollins.com. It's easy to take out a subscription. You just click on the menu button, then pull down, click on Become a Subscriber. It takes you to the sign-up page. And if you're allergic to PayPal, don't worry. We can work around that. The details are on the sign-up page at peterbcollins.com. Now, I am a sometime critic of Rachel Maddow. I watch her program on a daily basis, and I do appreciate her intellect, her sense of history, but in the past year, she really discredited herself by going so deeply in the tank for the Democrats and Hillary Clinton. So I want to praise the work that she did last night, because even Rachel Maddow has noticed that the Democrats, including the high-profile people like Elizabeth Warren, who have been hammering Donald Trump's cabinet appointments, asking them tough questions, grilling them to the max, and urging supporters not to whine and whimper, but to stand up and fight? Well, Elizabeth Warren and her colleagues have voted for virtually every nominee who's been confirmed so far. The only holdout on one vote is Senator Gillibrand, Kirsten Gillibrand from New York, who declined to vote for three of the appointments and then voted for Nikki Haley to be UN ambassador. And, you know, I don't understand what Democrats get from voting for these nominees. They're going to be confirmed anyway because the Republicans have the majority. And what this shows us, if the Democrats really want to stop somebody like Betsy DeVos or Jeff Sessions, they don't have unity in their own caucus to pull that off. And when we saw the Republicans, who not a single member voted for Obamacare, many of the confirmations were boycotted and confirmed only by Democrats. Well, there's a real disconnect here between the base, between the message we're getting from activists like Elizabeth Warren, and the actions that they're actually taking. And I demand an explanation of why Elizabeth Warren would vote to confirm Ben Carson to run the Department of Housing and Urban Development. He is grossly incompetent, and everybody knows it. And she asked him tough questions in the hearings and then voted for him. And I'll mention I have a little deeper concern about HUD, because one of my brothers works for HUD, and his new boss is Ben Carson. Oh, God. All right. Warren did answer on Facebook last night. She voted for Carson out of fear of who Trump's second choice would be. Now, frankly, this is bullshit, because it doesn't matter who the second choice would be. Carson is going to be confirmed by the Republican majority. So this is an empty excuse. And I personally don't buy it. Can you tell? Now, speaking of Jeff Sessions, his confirmation hearing, his committee hearing at Judiciary in the Senate has been delayed until next week. And there is some new information. My friend and colleague and the courageous and battled Alabama journalist, Roger Shuler, over at the Legal Schnauzer blog. You ever been there? I hope you'll take a trip there today, because his latest post outs Jeff Sessions as a closeted gay homophobe. Now, I can't prove this. I don't have any direct evidence of Jeff Sessions and his sexual orientation. But there are questions that have been raised. There's whispering that's been going on in Washington. His staunch support for Bill Pryor, a protege of his who succeeded him as the attorney general in Alabama, is the subject of speculation in Roger's post today. So take a look and see what you think. Yesterday, the Washington Post published a kind of hysterical piece suggesting that all of the top personnel, the management people at the State Department, had resigned in protest. So I reached out to a former veteran State Department official, Peter Van Buren. He's a great guy. He published a book called We Meant Well, based on his year assigned in Iraq to squander our money on meaningless reconstruction projects. And he responded to my question, was this a matter of conscience? Did these people quit because they don't want to work for Trump or for the ExxonMobil former CEO, Rex Tillerson? Well, Peter said, no one at the State Department resigned in protest. No one was fired. This is kind of a process that occurs. They resign from their political appointment, but they still work at the State Department, and they can stay as a Foreign Service operative. So several of the people who resigned are connected to the Clinton emails and the Benghazi story. Pat Kennedy played a significant role in both, as well as many other controversial issues during Clinton's term. Sources tell Peter Van Buren that although officially Kennedy retired, he was asked to do so by the Trump administration. And he notes that he worked there for 24 years in the Consular Affairs Department at State. He knows some of the people who are at the next echelon below those who have resigned. He said they all have equal experience and tenure. There will be no gap. And he sums it up by saying the Post article is, in my opinion, grossly alarming. And finally today, I want to share a story with you in case you missed it. We covered this earlier this week, and this started when I made a Facebook post and comments in my podcast warning people who are planning to protest the inauguration or join the women's marches around the country that if you want to avoid government surveillance, you should turn off your cell phone. And I was referencing Stingray, this dragnet surveillance system that simulates a local cell phone tower. It requires every cell phone near it to check in. And when it checks in, they can listen to you. They claim they don't listen to calls. They just look at metadata. But insiders have told me that they have complete control over your phone. And I want to thank Benny. Benny knows who you are. Benny is the name I've assigned to an insider in the surveillance state who has been sharing information with me to help educate me about these issues. And Benny has said, agencies have the technology to turn cell phones and other devices on from an off position. And this person says that Stingray and its companion gizmos have the ability to activate and capture cell phones. So trackers can capture a cell phone that is off, but the first step of the operation is to activate the phone to on and then capture the ID number. So also in subsequent communications, I learned that for most people now, it's difficult to remove the battery from your phone. That was one way that Ed Snowden had tipped us, that you can limit the ability of somebody to externally manipulate your phone, turn on the camera, check your contacts, listen to your voicemails. So I want to thank Benny for coming forward and helping me get the details of this right. It's actually worse than I had thought. And I don't know if you caught it, but after the NFL playoff game on CBS last Sunday night, I tuned in to watch 60 Minutes. And instead, I got the debut of a new show called Hunted. And Hunted is a weird show. It is a contest where people on teams try to avoid being captured by fake law enforcement officials. They go on the lam. They're given an hour's notice. And if they can stay on the lam and evade capture, I think, for 30 days, they win $250,000. And in the process, they reveal to us all of the surveillance systems that are available to the former government officials who populate the control room of the CBS show called Hunted. And I really am offended by this. I think that it normalizes domestic surveillance and makes some sort of a game out of law enforcement, hunts for fugitives, and things of that sort. I don't know if you've seen it, but I found it quite appalling. And as I close today, I've got one more clip for you from the Golden Gipper, Ronnie Reagan.
That gives anybody the right to spew filth over the airwaves.
Oh, sorry, wrong clip. Here it comes, I think, next. Oh, no, I queued up the wrong piece. Thanks for listening, and thanks for watching on Facebook today. You can catch the podcast anytime at peterbcollins.com.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling.